broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresher Wealth Podcast with Matt Sorensen and Mark Kohler. We are coming at you on this beautiful spring day. I don't know when you're listening to this podcast, but when this was recorded, it was a beautiful spring day.
Yeah, so that hopefully adds a little extra ambiance to your listening experience.
Yeah, spring is in the air, you know.
Spring is in the air. Who sings that?
Well, thanks so much for being with us today. This is, we've got a special guest we're going to bring on later in the show. But for those of you who are new, just want to let you know, this is Matt Sorensen. I've got the boring, nerdy voice. Mark Kohler's got the sexy, what's the Barry White?
Thank you, Matt.
Hear yourself too?
Thank you.
Just, you know, this is audio only, so I'm trying to make sure you know who's who.
Yeah, what is that we should do a spoof on the SNL
sweaty balls. Yeah.
Good times. Good times.
Yeah. the NPR voice.
Oh, that was so good. If you haven't watched that, anybody, here's your homework for this week. Just get on YouTube and SNL NPR sweaty balls.
Those were the good Swedish old days of Alec Baldwin. You know,
Alex Baldwin. There you go.
He had a great run there. Hunt for Red October, SNL. Now, if I see him as Donald Trump again one more time on SNL, I can't. It's not that funny anymore. I'm just like over it.
Like, it's true.
Anyways, let's not talk about Trump or politics. Yeah. Well, what we do talk about on this show is living the American dream, baby. Saving taxes, building wealth. We're out there trying to help you learn something, maybe educate you along the way. And I don't know, hopefully you laugh. What's our expectation, Mark? Why do we do this?
Edutainment. You know what? This is a selfish experience because Matt and I love it. It's a break from the mundane, everyday rigmarole of being a tax lawyer, and we're just... It's hard to break away. Some people go, how have you recorded over 500 podcasts? And we do it once a week over the last 11 years. And we just say, we just set aside the time. Sometimes it's hard, it's rewarding. We love it. I think we benefit the most. So appreciate all you listeners out there.
Very true.
So Matt, before we get to our special guest, may I say, all you new listeners, welcome. What we do is a tax and legal tip, something that all of you should hopefully find informational. You'll be a hit at your next cocktail party with this little factoid, or maybe it'll save you some coin, protect your assets. We're trying. We're going to throw down here. Matt, you got the legal tip this week?
I do, yeah, and I got a good one. So you better up your game. This tax tip better be good.
This tax tip is good. So we're going to throw,
because I got some parties this weekend I'm going to, and I need some good material. So.
Okay. I like it. Okay. Well, you just open that can, and here we go. A little riff to start it off, the legal tip.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Well, here's the legal tip, baby. Now, I want to talk about disclosures. Okay. Seller disclosure.
That sounds a little risque, Matt. Sorry.
Yeah.
I hope you're giving us a Victoria's Secret coupon code at the end of this. Does that come with this disclosure? No?
You got to stay tuned, though. So you got to make it to the end of the show. Okay.
All right. The end of the show.
All right. We're talking about seller disclosures. All right. When you're selling an asset, maybe you're selling a home, or you're buying a home, or you're selling your business, or you're buying a business. I just want to talk about the importance of disclosures. Okay. Now, here's a question for you, Mark. Let's say you own a house that's haunted. do you need to disclose that?
Oh, wow.
A haunted house. You think haunted at least.
Here's my legal answer. When in doubt, disclose. So
when in doubt, disclose it out.
No, ooh, there we go. When in doubt, disclose it out. Yeah, no, I'm serious. With today's, you know, ghost hunter show and everything, especially if it was on a show, you'd have to say, we suspect this house is haunted. I would say disclose when in doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a New York case that was on this.
What?
These people held out their home like publicly to be haunted, and they would tell people that. And then when they sold it, they didn't disclose it. And there was, a lawsuit following it and such. And the court said, if you believe and you have publicly stated that you think the house is haunted, you have to disclose that. So a little interesting, this little side note here. But
Hold on. I want to stay with this for a minute. So okay. In a lawsuit like this, if I'm not mistaken, now I'm a lover, not a fighter. I watch enough Law and Order. I think I can make a good comment here. There has to be damages, right? So there was not disclosed. Yeah. They bought the house and then they incurred damages. Maybe were they haunted? The value of the house was worth less after they bought it because, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I actually didn't get that far in the case, Mark. Jeez. I didn't need to be cross-examined on this. I just had a funny little tidbit to add in.
Man. No, that's good. I mean, but there had to be damages, right?
New York law is you believe your house is haunted. You got to disclose it.
Okay. Now,
maybe, the new people that bought the house, I don't know, maybe.
It could be a benefit. So you're suing me. I'm suing you. You just got on Ghost Hunters. You're doing a bed and breakfast, a haunted bed and breakfast now. You're making more money.
Yeah, it's true. It could be worth more, actually.
Good.
So who owes who here? Age. Really?
Yeah, I've got several haunting experiences. We won't go down Bigfoot today. That's a whole other story. I stayed at the Del Coronado in San Diego.
Yes.
Many of you know the Del. It is on the historic, there's a tour, National Hotel Registry of Haunted Hotels, and the Del is one of them. And I stayed on the same floor as the woman that died, continues to haunt the hotel, and had a couple experiences. I'm not kidding. It was eerie.
Yeah.
It's legit. I believe your tip, Matt.
You believe it? Okay. All right. So, okay. Well, there you go. So let me put a little, more reality to the tip, though.
Fair enough. Or to bring it down.
Yeah, which is, a lot of us, you could be buying rental properties. You could be buying a personal residence. Again, you could be buying a business. But as you're on the buyer side, you really want to get seller disclosures. And this happened with a client who bought a rehabbed property to be a rental. And all the rehab work was shoddy. And they did a terrible job in getting seller disclosures. They basically, in all the contracts and buying the property, it was like, this is as is, and they didn't inspect it. And so one of the things you really want to do as the buyer is force the seller to provide disclosures. Almost every state is going to have a form set of disclosures that, licensed agents, realtors will use when selling a home. So you should demand these. Just because you're an investor buying a property that's being rehabbed from another investor doesn't mean you skip all that paperwork. As a buyer, those disclosures really protect you. So you know what's been done on the property. You have a list of items that were repaired recently. You know if there was foundation issues when they bought the property. A lot of times they may be buying these properties and they're trashed. And so you need to know what you're getting into when you're buying those. So just keep that in mind. Demand those seller disclosures. It's meant to protect you as the buyer to make an informed decision and also make the seller accountable for what they sell you, that they did say that they sold you a property in good condition. So just watch out for those. Make sure you're getting those in buying any asset, whether it's a business or a home or investment property.
I like it. Great tip, Matt. And I think... It's interesting that when you're obviously a seller, you want to find the line of not disclosing too much to cause a problem with the sale or the value. And then if you're a buyer, you want everything in the world disclosed.
Right, yeah.
So sometimes we find ourselves on both sides of the table depending on who we're representing. And I think you have to realize there's a tug of war here. And that's okay. Just know which side of the rope you're on.
Yeah. And I think on the seller side, you know, you do need to be honest about that and don't mislead or withhold information that should be applicable to the buyer. Just, and that's where I think those state forms, what most states have for real estate in particular, is they kind of provide a good balance of what you should disclose and what you should cover. If you're going through the questions on the form and answering those truthfully, I think most sellers can feel good about, you know, how they've disclosed.
Yeah, no, I love it. Excellent comment. Okay, well, that was a very helpful legal tip. So I'm going to try to match that with quality here on my tax tip. So
okay,
let's get a riff out there.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. Well, my tax tip is not only going to, it's going to save you money in a different way. Matt's tip was saving you some sort of lawsuit problem or litigation or protecting your assets from a threat by being deceptive in a transaction. So a very good tip. Mine is on the tax return. I want to try to save you some taxes here. So here's an important tip. State taxation is continuing to climb. Income tax across the country rates are not going down. There are certainly states are playing the game. They need money. There are shortfalls in different state budgets. And so they're looking for more revenue. And we have clients continually call us and say, hey, I want to move to a non-tax state. What do I have to do? So Matt, today's tip, I wanted to give the nine states that the nine states that allow for non-income tax living, for lack of a better, non-income tax states, and give you some practical tips on how you make that transition.
Okay.
So first.
Everybody's always chasing this, man. Oh. I think now, as you've seen, you know, I think the East Coast in particular, after tax reform, has seen a lot of people. Apparently, the population has gone down in New York City. A lot of people are like, no, we're out of here.
Oh, in California, there's been an exodus. It's very, very common. And I think East Coast is gravitating, obviously, to New Hampshire, Florida, and Florida. And the West Coast is leaning on Wyoming and Nevada and Washington State. So it is really... So here's the list. Let's get it out there first. So here's the nine states: Alaska, Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, Texas, Washington State, Wyoming, New Hampshire, and Tennessee. Now, New Hampshire and Tennessee, they will tax your investment income, but all other types of income are exempt. So let's put some numbers on this. Let's say you live in California or New York. We'll go East Coast, West Coast. And to live in one of those states, you've got, you know, it can be challenging. A lot of the people that listen to our show are successful. They've got small businesses or they're professionals, and they're shooting to make a couple hundred grand a year, let's just say. And I know we've got everything in between from $50,000, $20,000, all the way up to $1 million a year. I'll have a phone call from one extreme to the other on a daily basis. So let's say you're just making 200 grand net. That's your AGI. Mm-hmm. Well, your state tax at just 10%, let's say it's 10%. It could be higher than that in some states, much less, but it's going to range from 5 to 12, but let's just say 10. Mm-hmm. And that's a $20,000 swing. I mean, that's a big deal. That's $1,500 or more dollars per month that you could put somewhere else in your, you know, cost of living. And mm-hmm. So we want to think about that. And so we have a lot of clients that they're able to move their business, they're retiring, they're selling their business, and they're like, I'm going to move to one of these states where I don't have state tax. And this, Matt, implies also retirement income could be tax-free and Social Security. Could you comment on the retirement income for a moment?
Yeah. So on the retirement income, obviously, you know, when you start taking distributions from your traditional retirement accounts, you're going to be paying tax on that. And that's federal and state income tax. Now, if you lived in, let's say, California, and you were getting tax deductions for throwing it all in, and then you move to, let's say, Texas, and you start pulling it out, well, no state income tax. You got all the deductions and not having to pay in California when you threw it in, and now you're pulling it out when you're living in Texas or established residency there. It's probably the better way to say it. And paying no income tax. Now, there's some nuance on that. on retirement plan income, and I had an article on this a while ago, actually, there are some states that do not tax retirement account income, period, that have an income tax otherwise for wage income, like Illinois, for example. Illinois says your retirement account distributions are not subject to state income tax, because they were seeing retirees leave that had built up large retirement accounts, and they're like, we're out of here. This is BS. And so they carved out a little niche saying, well, retirement income, we don't tax when you pull it out for state. And there's a couple other states like that, but Illinois was the big one.
I love it. And let me throw out one other domino effect since the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. See, previously, if you were in New York and you had $20,000 in income tax, you could deduct that on your federal return. So your federal tax actually went down because of the state tax you were paying. Well, now all of the state property taxes, income tax, and personal property taxes is limited to $10,000. So what we're seeing in that same example, not only is your state tax maybe at a 10% rate, then you've got your higher federal tax effect because you're not able to deduct all that. So anyway, the point is we have a lot of phone calls of people wanting to move to a state tax-free state. Now, here's what you got to do. You can't just say, I do it. This is where a consultation, we can go through all this.
Can't just get a post office box in Nevada?
Yeah. I just went and got a post office box in Nevada when I was down there on vacation. I just ran down.
Set up a Nevada C Corp and then just run all my income through that? That doesn't work?
No. So okay. It is a subjective analysis based on about 10 criteria. So let me show this. If you're going to move to another state, you've got to move your voter registration. You need to move your driver's license, your car registrations. You need to move your gym membership, your cell phone service. You can keep the same number, but a lot of times there's an opportunity to change cell phone. And then it comes to housing. Housing's a big deal. You've got to show you're paying rent or own a home in that state and effectively live there more than 6 months and 1 day out of the year. Now, we've had clients in California get audited for skipping out, and they're making $500,000 a year in California. They say, I live in Nevada. Oh my gosh, that's a $50,000 bill to the state of California. They're not going to roll over from that.
No, they're looking into that.
Yeah. In those audits, the state of California will pull your cell phone bill and look at where all your calls are coming from. And if you're like, oh, I live in Nevada, then why does your cell phone bill show all of your calls originating from a cell tower in Laguna Beach 9 months out of the year? I was vacationing for 9 months. No. Mm. And they shoot it down. They literally will just pull your cell phone bill. So yeah. Guys, if you want to live in a non-state free state.
Better call Saul, remember?
Yeah, you know, better call Saul at that point. Where's your burner phone? Yeah. Burner phone. But this is true. This is the lifestyle question. And I had this phone call with a big-time entrepreneur just a week ago. And he's like, Mark, we want to move to Boise, Idaho. We love Salmon River and the ski resort there and all this stuff. It's beautiful. We want to get out of California. And he goes, we're just going to get a condo over there. And I'm like, are you selling your house in California? It's silent. No. Well, then, okay. Is this for real? Well, we're going to, you know, and they always think I've got some way. No. I'm a creative guy, but you have got to literally move your lifestyle to this other state. Go back and visit. We left California. We go back and visit California all the time. I can have a VRBO and an Airbnb there and use it 2 or 3 weeks out of the year and enjoy those trips to California. But I'm going to the gym. I'm going to church. I'm going to vote. I'm going to DMV in that other state. And my kids are registered to go to school in that state. Anyway, that's what you got to do, and you can save big time money.
Yeah. I love it. Dude, that's a great tip. I think that's the holy grail. Well, that's not the Roth IRA tax-free income is pretty sweet. But also the state income tax, no state income tax, everybody's chasing that. Well, let me, if you don't mind, Mark, interrupt with some commercials. If we can just recognize our sponsors for today, the Self-Directed IRA Summit. Go to sdrisummit.com. That is going to be on June 8th. This is an update. June 8th in Chicago. It'll be live. We have an awesome location there and also be streaming virtual. And then we're also going to be in Hawaii, Mark and I both, on August 10th, where you can see it only live. So, you know, you got to get your butt out to Hawaii. I know it's rough, but either of those dates, love to see you out. SDRASummit.com for more information. Full day in-depth training. If you geek out on self-directed IRA stuff, you'll love it.
And let me say, in Chicago, we'll be bringing in Portillo's for lunch. And in Hawaii, we'll be doing a luau for lunch. Matt did agree to do a little luau dance. So you'll see him in his lava lava.
Apologies in advance.
Yeah. So I think you'll love it. All right. Well, let's get on to our topic of the day. And so excited about this.
Buckle up. It's time to refresh you, listeners. Mark and Matt have hand-selected professionals from around the world. From successful businesses, personal stories, or hard-hitting tips and tricks, please welcome today's Refresh Your Wealth guest.
All right. Well, it is my special privilege to welcome our guest today, Renee Boer, who is the author of How to Be a Great Boss. I should say co-author, How to Be a Great Boss. Also part of EOS, Entrepreneur Operating Systems, EOSworldwide.com is where you can find them, and spends a lot of his time, and EOS does, in working with owners of businesses and their leadership teams, trying to make them more effective. So when Mark and I looked at this, How to Be a Great Boss, we thought, oh, dang it, we need to figure this out for ourselves. So maybe someone else has been asking that question, how to be a great boss, because I know in particular Mark's trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, they don't teach this in school. How do you learn this, Renee?
Yeah, well, I can tell you how I learned it, and it was the hard way.
Yeah,
I think, you know.
There wasn't an easy way option, was there?
There was no easy way option. Yeah. When I got my first promotion to being a boss, no one said, oh, we're going to hand you the manual here. Read this, and you'll avoid a lot of heartache. You know, basically, as a lot of us that got into that role, I'm sure you'd agree, we got thrown into the deep end. And you kind of figured it out on your way. And I think a lot of people think that because I'm the owner of a business, somehow I need to be the rugged individual who knows all, sees all, solves all the problems, and does everything. Yeah. And in fact, the opposite is true. You know, you're only successful to the extent that you make your people successful.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
Well, and, let me just ask you that. How do you surround yourself with good people? I mean, how do you do that? It seems simple, but just even in our companies, and, you know, sometimes you grab some winners, and I feel like sometimes we get lucky. Sometimes you got to make changes. How else do I say it?
How
do you be effective?
I think that first topic is, how do you hire the right person? Is that a key trait of a good boss?
Sure, absolutely. So think about that for just a minute. Let's just start with an assumption that we have a person who decides to start a business, whether it's a housewife running a business out of her kitchen, or the guy who starts up a business working out of his garage.
Okay.
A lot of times we think, well, that's just one role. But in fact, that person is actually sitting in three different seats. So they have to produce something, right? A service or a product. So let's just call that the operation seat. Then they have to go out and market and sell that product or service. So they're in a sales and marketing seat, and they got to get the money to the bank. You know, they have to get paid. Cash is good, and they have to take it to the bank. So it may be one person, but that person is actually sitting in three separate seats. So far, so good?
I like it. Okay. Probably even more than three, but
I like how you distilled it down to three.
So those are the three necessary. Yeah,
the IT seat is more of a footstool. You know, but put your feet up on that, you know.
Yeah, so just imagine, right, that you're starting this business, you're in three different seats, and now of those three, I'll bet that anybody who starts a business really does have a particular hip pocket skill.
Okay.
Right.
So what I mean by that, they're good at one of those three more than the other two.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got it. So let's just say it's sales and marketing, right? So now the business starts to grow, and usually one person can be in all three of those seats, do a pretty decent job, and they get to a certain revenue number, and they have now hit the ceiling, and they now have to hire that very first employee, critical hire. What do you suppose most people do?
You know what? Quite honestly, a lot of people just cap out and they don't do anything. I'm just thinking a lot of our clients and listeners have gotten to that point where they've hit their maximum capacity of what they can do on their own. They can't produce more. They might be able to market or sell more and they can get maybe better customers or something, but they're not going to put more out. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people just cap out.
Yeah. And I think too, if I make a comment, I appreciate it, Renee, is I think a lot of people too think that having an employee is too expensive. They see it as I'm living month to month with this business as it is. Why is hiring an employee going to help me? It's going to cost me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that two really good points. Let's just back up for a second to what Matt said. A lot of people get to that point where they realize, I've now reached the level where it's pretty comfortable. I don't think I want to grow. And there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. In fact, I have a really good friend that started a painting and interior decorating business. And he was the guy and realized early on that he did not want to have any employees. Right? He wasn't kidding himself. It's like the last thing I want is the burden of having to deal with a bunch of employees. So I'm very comfortable running the business exactly the way it is today. Mm-hmm. That's fine. There's a lot of people like that. That's good. Good for you. Do that. Right?
Yeah. But forget about scaling up.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, forget about scaling.
Because you're like an artist. Because honestly, you're getting what you want from that business. You've got a nice, comfortable lifestyle. Life is not complicated. You're doing what you love to do, and you're doing it with clients that you really enjoy doing it with. So perfect.
Yeah.
But to your point, Mark, you really can't scale that for growth. But if you want to grow and you're sitting in those three seats, you need to hire someone to help you. And this is probably one of the most important decisions that someone needs to make now is of those three seats, what seat am I willing to let go of? So if I'm going to hire someone, mm-hmm. what are they going to do? And this gets you to your comment, Mark, about, and this is a mindset. Do I view that employee that I'm going to hire as a cost or as an investment?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the key. And right? And frankly, I would say, and I'm sure you'd agree, that if you have the wrong perspective, it's going to be a cost. You have to set the parameters, the operating procedures. We call them SOPs at our office, standard operating procedures. What are you going to do? How are you going to do it? And set them up for success. Because if I don't, it's on me if they're not an investment, I would presume.
Yeah, yeah. So let's just assume that it's the person is going to view this as an investment. Mm-hmm. So this is where thinking about those three necessary roles, and it doesn't matter if it's $1 billion business or $1 million business, I'll bet you can boil it all down to three seats. Right? There may be additional seats below that, but it's essentially sales, marketing, operations, and finance. So this is where, let's say that we have a business owner and his or her hip pocket skill, what they're really great at is selling.
Yeah.
The worst mistake that someone can make is to hire someone who does exactly what they like to do because they like hanging around with a fellow sales marketing person, mm-hmm. or they have a whole bunch of things that they hate doing. They're not quite clear on what all those things are, but they just hire someone with the expectation that you're going to do all the stuff that I really don't want to do. And
yeah.
either one of those is not going to provide a very good return on investment. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and that's an important decision. So it's, you know what, I'm pretty clear that I was filling three roles. I'm going to let go of the finance and administrative stuff. And I am going to clearly define at a really high level, what are the 5 to 6 major roles, responsibilities, and accountabilities for that finance/admin seat that I'm going to go out and find someone to fill. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times if we're not getting what we want, it's because we're not clear on what we want. And so forget about a job description for a minute. Just think about, at the end of the day, what would those 5 to 6 major roles and responsibilities be? And then you go and bring in that first person. And the very first thing, in addition to getting clarity on that seat, is to also think about what are the attributes, characteristics, and values that you're looking for. And so if you hire someone who doesn't value and share what you value, you've made a hiring mistake. And so I think it's really being clear on what are those core values. And I love Patrick Lencioni's book, The Ideal Team Player, where he tells a bit of a fable about a company and a CEO who takes over. And the very first thing he does is he really tries to clarify the core values, and he boils it down to three things: humble, hungry, and smart. Right? Mm-hmm. Without giving away that whole book, think about, you're now the business owner, you're hiring that first person. And let's just say that the things you value most in people is, I want to surround myself with people who are humble, hungry, and smart. If you did a diligent job on that, and then also made sure there was real clarity around the roles that people are filling, that's how you start scaling your business around people.
I love it. Well, Renee, I like that. So as we try to get a few takeaways here, number one, hiring the right people. And boy, that was just a handful of different thoughts and comments from all three of us. And those are excellent points. I like that. Humble, hungry, and smart. Let's say we've got someone listening here that has 10 to 15 employees, or even 5 to 10, and they've done their best to hire the right people. What's another characteristic of a good boss? Your book is just full of this. What one would you pull out that you'd really want to drive home?
So I think that, you know, to be a great boss, there's always these debates around what's more important, to be a great leader or to be a really good manager, right? And we seem to mix those things up and interchange them. And when you think about really great leaders and you think about leadership, it's all about establishing a clear direction for your organization and being crystal clear on that, whatever that might be. It's, here's the mission that matters, something that's inspirational, motivational. You're setting the course, right? And you're creating an opening. So when you start hiring people, you're actually filling additional seats. You've got seats that need to be filled. That's the vacuum. The vacuum needs to be filled. And if you provide a really compelling vision, that's creating an opening for people as well, right? So it's, if we're going to grow, let's just say at 10 times our size, that's creating one heck of an opportunity for people to help you figure out how the heck you're going to do that. So leadership is about establishing direction, then management is all about carrying it out, right? So now you're having to deal with all that messy stuff. You know, you've got to be really good at communicating and setting clear expectations and keeping the circles connected with people. And, you know, lots of times, you know, we hire really talented people and then we kind of turn them loose and ignore them. And the only people that we spend time with are those problem people, right? Yeah. So I'm dealing with people who don't share my values. They really don't get the job. They really don't want the job, which incidentally, I think is one of the biggest challenges in business today. Got a lot of people who are in roles that they put hand over heart. They really don't want to be there, or they don't have the capacity to do it.
Yeah.
And so, you got to be good at providing both leadership and management. That creates a culture of accountability where people will accept accountability, because you really can't hold people accountable. I mean, that's like being a parent telling your child to clean the room. I don't know how that worked for you guys, but it didn't work particularly well for my wife.
Well, I like that. I think that is a good way to, I think, define those two things, leadership, and it's more probably about vision and where are we going, and then management to make sure, you know, everybody's on task and coordinated and has responsibilities to how we get there. So
Matt, before you ask your question, I want to say that too. I think there's a lot of, we see business owners and ourselves at times in my career, I've been really good at the vision and bad at the managing. And then sometimes I'm really good at the managing, but poor at the vision. And so I can see how any business owner could get torn between those two. So I think that's an excellent point. But Matt, you were going to ask something, Renee.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I know another topic in your book, and I think this is one a lot of business owners struggle with, is they're trying to grow, they're trying to scale, trying to be more profitable, is how to effectively use their time. What should I, as a, you know, and being a good boss and the leader or manager of this company, where should I be effectively using my time?
That is a great question, Matt. You know, I think.
Thank you.
What's that?
I said, I thought so. Thank you.
That's why you asked it. Yeah, I just want to be clear. We are not having any fun on this call. This is knuckles and know-how. This is all knuckles and know-how.
Yeah,
so I think the very first thing is, you know, this is a little exercise that I take people through it. You know, it's called delegate and elevate. And when you think about all the things that you find yourself doing, if you were to keep a journal and write down everything you find yourself doing on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, you could probably come up with a list of at least 80 or 90 things. I mean, I know I've done this. Mm-hmm. When you think about all those things and you put them into four quadrants, and let's just say that upper left-hand quadrant would be activities that you love to do and you're really great at. Now, Dan Sullivan of Strategic Coach would call that your unique ability. And everybody has a unique ability. Unfortunately, most people never slow down long enough to discover what it really is. Mm-hmm. But that's the upper left-hand quadrant. The upper right-hand quadrant are things that we are good at and we like to do. So there's a subtle difference between good at and great at and love and like, right? So mm-hmm. then those would be, you know, in the upper two quadrants, so above the line. And then in that lower left-hand quadrant, you have things that you happen to be really good at, but you really don't like to do for whatever reason. Burned out on them, done them for a long time. It just doesn't give you any excitement or any real energy. It's just stuff you find yourself doing. You're pretty good at it.
Yeah.
Then the lower right hand are things that not only do you not like to do them, you're not even good at doing them. So I think when most people go through this exercise and they really think about it, they're doing a lot of activities that are in those bottom two quadrants. And I can just tell you from personal experience, after 35 years of having been in one industry, I burned out. I mean, I found myself in that lower left-hand quadrant. I was good at a lot of things because I spent a lot of time doing them, but it gave me no excitement, no energy, and I just felt like I'm just going through the motions. Mm-hmm. And how many of us find ourselves in that situation or in that bottom right-hand quadrant where, you know, you're incompetent, but you're doing it because you feel like, hey, there's nobody else to do it. And every day then is waking up, going through a whole bunch of stuff that really doesn't help your company grow, doesn't help you grow, and you're just sort of stuck. Yeah. And so the whole idea with this is to let go and put a plan together, let go of everything below the line in those bottom two quadrants and spend more of your time and energy in the top two quadrants. And you can't get to the top two without delegating and letting go of the bottom too.
I love it. And I want to create a takeaway here for our listeners too, that I think is really important. And we know we've only got you for a few more minutes, Renee, and thank you for your valuable time here, is it is so hard to get your mojo back. I'm going to just call it that. And sometimes you lose your mojo. Yep. I can seriously think of 2 to 3 specific times in my career as a business owner where I was just burned out. I was burned out. I'm sure if I, on a personal note, Matt and I would go to lunch today and he'd say, nope, I remember that. I remember when you were burned out. And I had to get my mojo back. And I think that's something I would tell all the entrepreneurs on listening today. Don't feel like you're alone. Don't feel isolated. Don't feel like you're a failure, that this is only you.
Yeah.
Sometimes outside looking in, oh man, Mark, you're so successful. I look at other business owners. Oh, they've got it all together. No, they go through the same heartaches we do, and they're going to have ups and downs, and you're going to need to get your mojo back. And so I would recommend everybody find that board of advisors, that consultant, like an EOS consultant. They'll come out, they'll create a plan for your small business to help you get your mojo back and get scaling and enjoy work again. But there's all sorts of lawyers out there. There's all sorts of accountants and business consultants. But the point is, find someone that relates to you. We may not be the perfect lawyer for you or accountant. That's fine. We're grateful you're still listening to the podcast. EOS could be a good fit, couldn't be a good fit. Doesn't matter. But find someone that can look from the outside looking in and help you get that mojo back. I don't know. Anything you'd add to that, Renee? That was a big comment, but that plays a lot into what you do every day, isn't it?
Yeah. So just a couple of thoughts on that, getting your mojo back. Way back when I got my first job as a boss, I was so excited because I thought, you know what? And actually, it was managing a Pizza Hut restaurant right out of college. I worked my way through college at Pizza Hut. When I graduated, I got offered the job of running a restaurant, and I jumped at it. My mother wept. She couldn't believe it. You went to college for 4.5 years and you're running a pizza place. What are you thinking? But what really got me excited about it was, here I am, I'm graduating college, and I get to work in a business where I get to pick all the people that I want to work with. Mm-hmm. Because I want to do what I really love to do with people I really enjoy. And so 35 years later, after all of this other stuff, you couldn't have said it better, I lost my mojo. And you have all these activities, and you've lost your way. And when you sit back and you think about, well, wait a minute, why did I get into this in the first place? Right? Mm-hmm. It's all about the people and building teams and succeeding, and it was about people. It's about people. You know, I always kid my clients, you know, if you could just get rid of customers and employees, wouldn't this be a hell of a business? I mean, good luck with that. You know, I haven't seen many, but, you know, but that's what got me excited in the first place. And then it was, you know, all those years later that, you know, I met Gino Wickman and got started down this road of EOS and helping entrepreneurs and business owners and their leadership teams get what they want from their business. So it was like starting over again, you know? as the song goes, I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now.
Mm-hmm. Well, great story.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Renee. Really appreciate all your comments. Remember EOS as in iOS, but Entrepreneur Operating Systems, EOSworldwide.com. Go there for more information about Renee or to find an EOS, as they call them, implementer that could help you implement some of these systems into your business. Also, the book, How to Be a Great Boss, you can find on Amazon. Anything else you want us to drop, Renee? We really appreciate all your comments and thoughts on this. I took a couple notes. I'm not going to lie. I need to be better at this. I learned a lot. So anything else you want to drop?
No,
anything you want to, any other contact info or anything?
No, I just one thing that Mark mentioned earlier is you're not alone, and it's the people that really want help that I think go the furthest in life. They go the farthest, and when you think about some of my clients, not only do they have an individual coach that helps them personally, they belong to a peer group, right? Whether it's Vistage or YPO or a CEO roundtable, but they belong to some sort of a peer group where they're learning from each other, mm-hmm. and they're running on EOS. So the coach helps them personally, the peer group helps their team, and EOS helps their entire company. And boy, when you hit the trifecta and you're getting that kind of help, you can't help but build a impenetrable fortress, as I like to call it, you know, as a business. So that's my message.
I love it. Renee, thanks so much for being with us. This is where entrepreneurs live. We want to be your number one podcast. And I think this is another a quiver in your another arrow in your quiver of tools to use, because as a business owner, you are wearing so many hats. I like how Renee, you know, simplified it down to three, but I think if you're listening to the show and you're an entrepreneur, someday you wake up and you don't even know where to start, but that's normal. Keep listening. We'll be here every week talking about tax and legal tips, business tips, and trying to help you better live your American dream. Renee, thank you. And Matt, I sure love you as a business partner. I wouldn't be here without you. And thanks to you, the listeners, we wouldn't be here without you either. So we'll see you next week on another episode of Refresh Your Wealth.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's eBooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.